Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Senator Elizabeth Warren has said she was fired from a teaching job in 1971 for being pregnant. Here's the Massachusetts senator and Democratic presidential candidate talking about that experience with CBS News.
I was 6 months pregnant. It was my first job. I was 22 years old. And the job that was mine, that I'd been hired for the next year, was taken away when they knew I was pregnant.
After a conservative news site targeted Warren's depiction of her experience, hundreds of women took to social media to talk about their own experiences with pregnancy discrimination, showing that Warren's experience was neither unique nor out of date. Joining us in the studio to talk more about this is Emma Quinn Judge, who's a partner at Zalkind, Duncan & Bernstein, an employment law firm in Boston. Emma, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Catherine Goldstein, creator and host of the Double Shift podcast and contributor to Cognoscenti, WBUR's ideas and opinion page. Catherine joins us from Durham, North Carolina. Hello, Catherine.
Hi there.
And Catherine, I just want to note to our listeners, I believe you contributed to a WBUR Cognoscenti piece just last week that collected and told a lot of local women's discrimination stories, correct?
Yes.
Now, we'll get to our panelists in a minute, but first, how about you? Have you experienced pregnancy or maternal discrimination at work? What did you do about it? Or are you a business owner thinking about how you're going to balance maternity leave or parental obligations with your own company's needs? We invite you to join the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. All right, back to our panelists now. Let me just begin by asking you, what was your reaction to Elizabeth Warren's story about her own firing, Emma?
I think it's incredibly credible, and I think it's the sort of story that we see in different forms today. Pregnancy discrimination, unlike many other forms of discrimination, remains something that people do openly. You know, an employee can tell their supervisor they're pregnant and be fired the next week. That remains the case today, and it's pervasive. We see that women of color, for example, are disproportionately affected by it. But really, you see it across all job levels in different forms, from blatant to more subtle.
And you've really seen this basically your entire career. Is that right, Emma?
Certainly. It's nothing new. It's been around. What's changing in Massachusetts is the legal protections have certainly increased in the last few years. We've had a couple of new laws, one of which hasn't quite gone into place yet. We'll have paid family leave starting in 2021. But the protections for workers in Massachusetts are really fantastic right now. I think what there needs to be more of is education and familiarity with the laws, both for employees and employers.
And I'm hoping that in a little bit later in the conversation, we'll get more into detail about what laws and protections are in place now. First, Catherine, I want to turn to you. It's kind of an interesting moment. You had a 2018 op-ed for the New York Times shortly after sort of the spark of the hashtag MeToo movement. And you actually wrote then that you were kind of waiting for some similar big moment or big story to break that would push this out into the open and push out into view our treatment of mothers in the workplace. Is this that moment? Is this the moment you were looking for or waiting for?
So in my New York Times op-ed, I did posit when would we have a hashtag moms too moment? And that was about a year and a half ago. And I would say this is the closest we've gotten so far to the moms too moment. And I think it's very a very powerful moment because personally, as a journalist who covers these issues and who has cares very deeply about the status of mothers in the workplace, I'm so thrilled that this is being talked about on the national stage. Basically, pregnancy discrimination has really been seen as a niche issue. It has been seen as something that really just affects a very small group of people. It's maybe a few bad bosses rather than a systemic problem that affects I think many mothers' careers and really affects all women in the workplace. So I think that this is definitely the spark of the moms too moment. And I was thinking back about Anita Hill, you know, when she came forward with her stories, people eviscerated her, but she did. It did end up with a lot of more people filing complaints, and so hopefully we'll continue to hear more and more stories about why this is a problem.
That was her story of sexual harassment from Clarence Thomas that was sort of aired at the Senate hearings for the Supreme Court justice. That's, I'm assuming, what you're referring to.
Yes.
All right. I'd like to take a call. We've got our first call in 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation, share your stories, ask questions of our panelists. Jennifer from Templeton is calling. Jennifer, what is your story?
Hi. I have one daughter, and I was working in a retail establishment when I went into labor as a manager already there. I had my daughter 3.5 weeks early. My water broke right in the store, and I found out years later that the only reason I was able to keep my job when I went back 6 weeks later instead of a full 2 months like my doctor had wanted was because my store manager and my assistant store manager blatantly ignored my district manager telling them to hire a new manager to take my spot.
How long ago was this, Jennifer?
My daughter just turned 8.
So not that long ago, really.
No, not at all. This was September 5th, 2011 is when I went into labor.
Jennifer, thanks for the call. I saw Emma, you visibly winced at one point during Jennifer's story. So let me invite your reaction.
I think one of the things that's challenging about pregnancy in the workplace is just how personal it is, that you have these very personal moments in front of your colleagues. And so the story of someone really going into labor in the workplace brings home how you can't separate your personal life, your private life, from your work life, even though I think for women they face this double bind of needing to be perceived as both a good worker and a good mother, and sometimes employers view those as incompatible. We need to learn to coexist. We need to learn to find some harmony between those two sides, and I think the law allows for that, but I just think that story really illustrates the personal nature of this. This is not just about work.
And let me ask you, had Jennifer's employer terminated her as a result of that, would that have been legal to do 8 years ago?
No. I mean, pregnancy discrimination or gender discrimination, which is linked to pregnancy discrimination, was illegal 8 years ago in Massachusetts. It was illegal federally and has been since the 70s when Congress overturned a Supreme Court decision actually saying that pregnancy discrimination wasn't gender discrimination. So certainly it wouldn't be legal to fire someone merely because they have had a child. And that's been the case for decades.
So, Catherine, did Jennifer's story resonate with you? Have you heard other stories like that since you've been working on the double shift? I know you talk to a lot of women in the workplace.
When I published my New York Times op-ed, my inbox was flooded with stories like Jennifer's. And unfortunately, I think people often, I agree with your assessment that this is sort of a problem at all levels of all professions. But I think people who work in lower paid positions in retail or food service, jobs like that, are often sort of seen as the most disposable and have really, really terrible stories. And as Jennifer mentioned, she was planning to go back to work 2 months after giving birth. Well, you know, both economists and maternal and child health experts would recommend much longer time. And in America, we've really normalized these incredibly short maternity leaves. And I think that sort of heightens that, you know, people are not ready to go back to work at 6 weeks or 2 months. And we've kind of made that the norm. And we want to fire people for, you know, not coming back even sooner. And so I hope that we can have a much larger conversation about how all of these pieces fit together and how we treat mothers in the workplace.
Emma, you talked about the paid leave legislation that's going to come into effect in 2020 here in Massachusetts. Will that affect how long a woman can take or a man can take when their family has a new child?
So Massachusetts already has a parental leave law that sort of sets the floor. Employers can do more, but that allows people a minimum of 8 weeks of unpaid leave. The Family Medical Leave Act won't necessarily change that amount of leave, although it does allow people up to 26 weeks per year for a variety of reasons that can be stacked together. So caring for a family member versus your own medical needs. And so I think certainly in the case of if you're giving birth, there might be a medical leave component for yourself and then a component of a leave where you'd be caring for a family member. I think what's really important about the law, which will start to allow paid parental leave in 2021, is that it will provide some income substitution, because at the federal and state level, what we have right now is laws that allow for unpaid leave, which a lot of people just can't afford to take, men or women. And so having some level of income substitution will open up the possibility of paid leave for a much broader number of people.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you'd like to join the conversation. Have you experienced discrimination in the workplace because of pregnancy or because you had small children? On the other hand, have you interviewed somebody, an employee for a job, and found yourself taking into consideration whether or not that person was likely to have children later? And how did that affect your thinking? Or do you think you were that person on the other side of an interview? Call us and share your questions, your thoughts, your experiences. Again, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Catherine, in listening to you and Emma, one of the things that I find myself thinking about, when the hashtag MeToo movement began, there was very quickly an understanding that maybe this was a movement of privileged white women who could both afford to speak up and who had the resources to do something about it. I've heard both you and Emma talk about people who are less enfranchised, people who have less work flexibility, people who can't afford, for example, to take unpaid leave. What does it take to have solidarity across all workers who might be experiencing this? And what do we need to understand to sort of enfranchise everybody into experiencing or fighting for their rights?
So I would say that I think this is, you know, paid family leave and being treated fairly in the workplace is a universal human right. And I agree that a lot of times the people who do take legal action or really are standing up for themselves are the ones who have the most privilege, because they can, sort of afford to take those risks, or they're, you know, not as worried about where their next paycheck is going to come from. So they're more willing to speak up. Some encouraging examples I have seen in my reporting is that I think people are seeing family leave especially as not just, you know, something that they should negotiate for themselves, but how they should be able to make their whole company better for everyone. And we're seeing this with some big companies like Walmart and some other very large employers have had two different systems for their family leave. The executives get very generous packages, and the store workers and the, you know, people who are working on the floor get almost nothing. So people are starting to challenge that. And I think, you know, people who have more privilege needs to bring other people in their companies and communities along with them, including for advocating for state policies and federal policies.
Emma, it may not be as clear in the moment in a workplace environment as, oh, you're pregnant, you're fired, or, oh, you're pregnant, you don't get the job. What are some of the more implicit ways that discrimination in this area can happen?
So there can be stereotypes about women, and a lot of this is often linked to their caregiving roles. I think pregnancy is inextricably linked to stereotypes about what women should do as mothers. So you may see the slightly more subtle forms are when a woman returns to work after leave, her job responsibilities may change. You may also see a form of benevolent sexism where employers think they're doing what's right for the woman. You don't want to work on this high-profile account because you've just had a baby. It's going to be too stressful for you. You don't want to travel because you've just had a baby. You don't want to work nights, maybe if you're in a job where there are better tips in the evening. And that takes away choice from women, and it's often done from a vantage point of, I'm helping you.
It's not mean-spirited. I mean, at one level, don't you want your employer thinking thoughtfully and compassionately about your needs as a person who both has a family and works?
Right. And so where you run into a problem is that your employer is taking choice away from you. You know, the employer needs to treat you as a fully fledged human being who can make these decisions for yourself. And if you can make these decisions for yourself, you can decide what you want to do in your career and what's appropriate for your family. There's a case that went through the court system around here several years ago where an employer didn't promote someone and said, you know, when you look back on this, you'll feel good that we made this decision for you. And the interviewer is looking at your situation. I mean, you have these triplets. Really, we feel overwhelmed imagining what your life is like. So you'll feel better that we didn't give you this promotion. And so what the law says is you can't make those choices for women. Women get to make their own choices. And it may be that you want to go to your employer and say, I don't want to travel for the first 6 months after I come back to work after having a baby.
But that has to be your choice.
And that's a conversation, exactly. It's your choice. But you don't want people making those choices for you.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Kevin from Marblehead, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I think this is a great conversation. Thanks so much. This discrimination that has taken place obviously needs to be talked about. But I read something in the Boston Globe recently that spoke, and I'm actually not a big supporter of the senator, and that's why I read this article.
Senator Warren, you mean?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
And I know that the first commenter there had said that it was a very credible story. But my understanding of it is that when she was at Harvard, she described a situation quite different than actually what happened. So I don't want to deter from this conversation that this has been brought on by what Senator Warren said, but I think the actuality of what took place might be a little bit of sensationalism by her own words back several years when she talked about her early career.
Thanks for that call, Kevin. And I'm going to turn to Catherine on this. Catherine, I think Kevin's referring to a speech that Elizabeth Warren gave in 2007 where she spoke about that time in her life and talked about the decision a different way. When somebody has experienced discrimination, do they... So, one, what do you think of the merits of Kevin's comments? And two, do we expect a person to speak about that instance the same way over time?
So in my experiences, hearing from a lot of women who have experienced discrimination similar to Senator Warren, a lot of times people are embarrassed. They feel like they've done something wrong. They feel ashamed. And, you know, saying you lost your job because you were pregnant doesn't always sound great on your resume. You know, people want to put a more positive spin on their work experiences and their lives because it's tough to talk about. And also people, like we've seen with Senator Warren, people don't believe you. Regardless of what evidence there is, I think we're still in a moment where, although I think this idea of believe women is very powerful, there's still a lot of skepticism met with these kinds of claims, as we're hearing from Kevin and others who were not totally sure about her account.
I do want to note, Catherine, just before you go on, we don't 100% know what happened that moment.
Right. This is, nearly 50 years ago. Some of the key players are no longer alive. We have a few little pieces of evidence. So I would not say that I know 100% for sure exactly what happened. I would say based on her description and experiences of many of her contemporaries, I think this is a highly plausible description. And it's also highly plausible that not everyone always feels comfortable talking about these things, and especially in a different era. Even 10 years ago, I think there was less understanding or appreciation for this. I think there was less understanding and appreciation for this 3 years ago. So that part doesn't raise my concerns as much as perhaps it does for Kevin.
I want to get another call in here. Marilyn from Newton is on the line. Marilyn, go ahead.
Hello. I am very interested in this program, and I really agree with the idea that you are presenting in the program of women who are pregnant or who are near giving birth. But I was thinking about my father's business maybe about 20, 30 years ago, and about all small business owners. He was a small business owner, very successful with the small business. And this was a bakery. And if the person who did the cake frosting and molding some of the cakes that he sold had suddenly had to leave, or even had given him word of leaving, it would have been a slight problem if she gave him word on time. If she had to do it
because of maternity leave, Marilyn, is that what you're thinking?
Excuse me?
If she had to do it because of maternity leave?
No. Yes, maternity leave. What? My question is this. I'm sorry to have taken so long. What happens to the employer of a small business where really it counts very much to have people in place you can depend on?
Yeah.
Because it went. When the employer...
So I'm sorry to interrupt, Marilyn, but I want to... We got a lot of calls. I think we know the direction of your question, and I want to give our panelists a chance to address it. Catherine, Emma, the employer, it's a small business. They're paying two salaries. That is a huge stretch. Is that not a legitimate concern, a legitimate claim?
So in Massachusetts, the leave requirement is actually unpaid. So employers may pay people when they go on leave, but they can go on leave for 8 weeks that's unpaid. So you're not necessarily paying two salaries.
But you may be losing an experienced employee who is more productive than the person you'd substitute with.
Certainly. And so our laws do cover any employers that have six or more employees. And frankly, even if you have fewer employees in Massachusetts, there are other civil rights laws that will probably protect you against sex discrimination. So we've made a public policy decision as a state that we are going to protect people in these situations. Now, there's the issue of someone going out on leave, but there's also what happens before someone goes out on leave. They may need accommodations. They may need more breaks. They may need to sit. They may need to carry a water bottle, all those sorts of things. One of our newer laws, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Protection Act, allows for people to seek those accommodations, and there's an interactive process that they're supposed to have with their employer around those accommodations. It's supposed to be a real dialogue, and the employer is supposed to accommodate them unless it creates a hardship, an undue hardship. And so
for the employer.
Exactly. And so that is the point where you look at the size of the business, and what's an undue hardship for a multi-million-dollar corporation is going to be different from what an undue hardship is for an employer who has 10 employees. But really, we've made a public policy decision that although there may be costs associated, it is to everybody's benefit to provide these rights for pregnant workers. Pregnancy is, you know, it's a blip in a woman's career if she works from 20 into her 60s or 70s. It's a brief moment, and it shouldn't derail her career. And that's the decision we've made in the law.
Catherine, in reality, have you heard stories where even though it's a blip and maybe there were legal protections, it did derail a career? It did provide substantial impact on the trajectory of a woman's professional life?
Definitely. I think many, many people really that I have talked to have really been felt that their pregnancy or becoming a mother really derailed them. And, you know, we see a lot of moms who go on to start their own small businesses or sort of take a step out of the workforce. And a lot of times we frame that as a choice, but a lot of times it's because because they weren't in a workplace that could possibly support them or was openly hostile or they faced a lot of these challenges. I think that the answer around small business really is that it's not fair to the small business owner to have to shoulder these burdens, which is why we need policies like you all are developing in Massachusetts. And we also need federally mandated paid family leave for everyone, because a lot of the workforce is moving away from even being employed full time. Freelancers are becoming a huge part of the economy, and we have to think creatively about how to support everyone, regardless of what kind of employer they work for, so we don't have a situation of the haves and the have-nots when it comes to this kind of treatment.
Okay, we have just a couple minutes left, so I'm going to ask you each one brief question. Emma, to you, what's the next step legally or in terms of policy to improve the relationship between working parents and their employers?
I think we have great laws in place in Massachusetts, and I really think it's a process of education. One of the things that our Parental Leave Act requires is that employers post policies conspicuously. And that may sound like a small thing, but if you're a pregnant woman going to your boss to tell your boss that you are pregnant, that's usually a pretty scary moment. And just knowing what your rights are, just knowing what the framework for that conversation is a great starting point. That's one of the provisions of the law that I find is often overlooked, but can have a big difference in terms of how a woman experiences that conversation. I also think employers should be really trying to create a welcoming culture for parents. Part of that is not just working with employees who are seeking leave, but also their coworkers, not dumping work on coworkers, which breeds a lot of resentment. But I really think education is the biggest area we can improve on in Massachusetts.
And Catherine, is it time to extend this storytelling and this opportunity to share your experiences with parents who are not women?
Absolutely. In my research and reporting, I found that the best way to reduce sexism in the workplace against women is to give and have men take a robust paternity leave. It actually improves their relationships with their own children, and it increases their sensitivity to working mothers in the workplace. So I do not think this is an issue that just affects mothers, and I would like to see fathers both taking their paternity leave and sort of getting more involved in this cause, and not seeing it as just a niche issue that only mothers are fighting for.
That's Catherine Goldstein, creator and host of the Double Shift podcast and a contributor to Cognoscenti. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you.
And Emma Quinn Judge, a partner at Zellkind, Duncan & Bernstein, an employment law firm in Boston. Thanks so much, Emma.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.